All right, so picture this. You finally get that little slice of country peace and quiet, you know?
Ah, the dream.
Yeah, exactly right. Years go by, you're loving life, and then bam, new neighbor rolls in.
Ah.
Yeah, and starts a business that is anything biddy tea peaceful. We're talking 100 barking dogs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 100 dogs. That's the situation in Dobbs v. Wiggins, a 2010 case from the Illinois Appellate Court. And that's what we're diving into today.
100 dogs. That's
It's a lot, right?
yeah, it definitely sounds like a recipe for a classic property rights battle.
Yeah.
You've got the people who were there first, the Dobbs and Richards families just trying to enjoy their quiet rural life. And then on the other side, you've got Mr. Wiggins with his well, his very vocal dog breeding business.
Right. So for those of us who, aren't lawyers,
Yeah.
break down this whole nuisance thing for us. Is it really enough to sue someone just because Fido's a little yappy?
Well, it's not quite that simple. You know, the law gets that we've got to put up with some stuff from our neighbor. It's all about striking a balance. But when that interference, you know, when it becomes too much, when it's substantial A and D unreasonable, that's when it crosses the line into legally being a private nuisance. So it's got to be more than just like a little annoying, you know, it's got to really mess with your ability to actually use and enjoy your own property.
Gotcha. So how do you prove that? I mean, anyone can say, oh my gosh, my neighbor's dog is ruining my life.
Yeah.
How did they prove the barking was that bad?
Well, that's where the evidence comes in. And the Dobbs and Richards families, they were smart about this. They documented everything. You know, they kept these really detailed logs of the barking. They got people from the neighborhood, other neighbors, to back them up on how bad it was. They had witnesses talking about, you know, how it affected their sleep, their ability to even like be in their own yards, their quality of life, you know?
He brought in witnesses. That's like straight out of a movie.
Right. It is a little dramatic.
Was there anything, more concrete though? Like something more than just people saying, yeah, it was loud.
They did. And this is where it gets really interesting, especially for anyone who might be dealing with a nuisance case themselves. They actually submitted audio recordings of the barking as evidence.
Whoa, wait, audio recordings.
Yeah.
I can only imagine the courtroom just like hours of barking.
I know it paints a pretty vivid picture, right?
So did Mr. Wiggins try to fight that? Like, get that out of here.
He did. He absolutely tried to challenge those recordings and argued they shouldn't be allowed as evidence. But the
What?
plaintiffs, they were prepared. They had authenticated the recordings properly. You know, they showed the court that these recordings were a genuine, accurate representation of the
But
noise.
it wasn't like they were just, making it sound worse than it was.
Exactly. They covered their bases. And you know what? That's a great lesson for anyone building a legal case, right? Solid evidence is key in this case. Those recordings, they really solidify the argument that this barking wasn't just annoying, it was a legitimate nuisance.
All right, so we've got 100 barking dogs, annoyed neighbors, sneaky recordings. What happens next? Did the court just shut down his whole business?
Well, they did rule in favor of the Dobbs and Richards families. The trial court put in place what's called an injunction. It's basically a court order saying, stop doing the thing that's causing the problem. But here's where things get interesting. They limited Mr. Wiggins to only 6 dogs.
Wait, hold on. 6 dogs out of 100. That seems a little extreme.
You're catching up. You're right. He wasn't exactly thrilled about that outcome. He appealed the decision, argued that 6-dog limit was way too harsh and completely arbitrary, and that is where things get really interesting.
Okay, now I'm on the edge of my seat here. What happened next?
Well, before we jump to the appellate court's decision, let's think about this for a second. Why would a court agree that barking is a problem, but then maybe push back on a solution that seems, you know, like it would fix the problem?
Yeah, like why wouldn't fewer dogs automatically equal less noise?
That's a great question, and it gets right to the heart of some important legal thinking. It comes down to this idea of being specific when it comes to legal remedies. You see, injunctions like the one in this case, they can't just be random or based on a hunch.
Oh, okay.
They've got to be directly connected to the evidence that was presented and aimed at tackling the actual problem head on.
So it's not enough to just say, hey, less dogs equals less noise. They had to prove that having 6 dogs specifically would actually make a difference.
Exactly. The appeals court basically said, look, we agree the barking is a nuisance, but there's nothing to show that limiting Mr. Wiggins to just 6 dogs will actually solve anything. It's like saying, okay, 100 dogs might be too loud, but who's to say 6 won't be just as bad? They saw that 6-dog limit as just picking a number out of thin air, not an actual solution based on real evidence.
That's fascinating. So the higher court agrees the barking's a problem, but they don't like the solution the lower court came up with. So what happens then? Did they come up with a better solution or just say, figure it out yourselves?
They didn't give up, but they did send the case back to the trial court to come up with a more focused fix. And this is important for anyone dealing with a nuisance case.
Yeah, totally.
What lessons can we take away from this?
Well, it seems like you got to be really thorough with your evidence, like we were talking about. Those recordings were super important in showing just how bad the noise problem was. And it seems like any documentation, witness statements, anything that can give the court a clear picture of what's going on is super valuable.
You're absolutely right. Solid evidence is the foundation. You're going to make the court see that this isn't just a minor inconvenience. It's seriously messing with your ability to enjoy your property. And remember, the court's always looking at the bigger picture, weighing the damage to the plaintiffs against, you know, how useful the defendant's actions are. So in this case, they were looking at the impact of the barking on the neighbors compared to the value of Mr. Wiggins' dog breeding business.
Interesting. So if Mr. Wiggins had been running, say, a doggy daycare for service dogs or you know, something with a clear community benefit, maybe the outcome would have been different.
It's definitely possible the court might have been more willing to find ways to manage the noise and let the business keep going. This case really shows how nuisance law isn't just about hard and fast rules.
Yeah.
It's about navigating those gray areas and finding solutions that work for everyone.
Makes sense. So we've got the evidence part down. What else should lawyers or even just regular people who might be in a similar situation, what else should they keep in mind?
Remember that specificity we talked about earlier. If you're going for an injunction, don't overreach. Be precise in what you're asking for and make sure it directly relates to the evidence you've presented. So instead of saying get rid of most of the dogs, zero in on things that directly target the noise, like soundproofing settings, specific times for outdoor activities, maybe even behavioral training for the dogs.
So it's less about you can only have six dogs and more about here's how we can make sure those dogs aren't a problem.
Exactly. Courts are more likely to go for solutions that are specific and well supported. This isn't about punishing someone for having a business. It's about finding a way for everyone to live peacefully. And that's something to think about. Even outside of legal battles, you know, what could Mr. Wiggins have done differently to avoid ending up in court in the first place?
Right. Like maybe some soundproofing or better fences, even just talking to the neighbors before things got out of hand could have saved everyone a lot of trouble.
You got it. It's a good reminder that being aware of our surroundings and how what we do affects others is really important. Sometimes a little effort up front can prevent big conflicts down the road.
It's like the legal version of that saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
I like that.
Yeah.
But even with the best of intentions, sometimes these conflicts can't be avoided. And that's when understanding nuisance law and how it works can be really valuable. So what's the main takeaway for our listeners today? The one thing they should remember from this case?
I think it really drives home the point that even something totally legal, you know, something you have every right to do on your own property can become a legal problem if it's interfering with your neighbor's ability to enjoy their property.
Exactly. It's a good reminder that property rights come with responsibilities too. We got to be mindful of how our actions impact the people around us. You know, in this case, Mr. Wiggins was held responsible for how his business was affecting his neighbors.
It makes you think, though, how different things might have been if he had, you know, tried to deal with the noise before it became a legal thing.
Right.
What if you thought about soundproofing or, you know, placing the kennels differently, even just talking to his neighbors about their concerns beforehand?
That's such an important point. Being proactive and putting in a little effort to minimize disruptions can really prevent things from spiraling out of control. It highlights how important it is to be a good neighbor, not just in a friendly way, but legally too.
For sure. So for our listeners who might find themselves in a similar situation, what's the best advice based on what we've learned from Dobbs v. Wiggins?
First things first, document everything. Keep detailed records of what's going on, gather witness statements, and if you can get audio or video recordings to back up your claims. Remember, good evidence is crucial in these cases.
So like we said before, don't just go to court complaining. Come prepared with the receipts, right? What else?
When you're looking for legal solutions, be specific. Clearly explain how you're being harmed and what concrete steps you're asking the court to take. So instead of saying something vague like they need to reduce the number of dogs, focus on things that directly address the noise, like requiring noise reduction measures or limits on when certain activities can happen.
Gotcha. So it's about finding practical solutions that actually fix the problem, not just throwing out random restrictions.
Exactly. Anything else?
Yeah. Is there anything else our listeners should remember?
Keep in mind that courts often try to find a balance between everyone's interests. If you show that you're willing to compromise and find solutions that work for everyone, you'll be in a much better position. And sometimes just having a conversation with your neighbor can solve things before they turn into big legal battles.
So the bottom line is understanding your rights and responsibilities as a property owner, being considerate of your neighbors and talking things out can go a long way in preventing and solving these kinds of problems.
Absolutely. And for anyone who wants to learn more, the full case opinion of Dobbs v. Wiggins is definitely worth reading. It gives you a really good understanding of how nuisance law works and how courts deal with these tricky situations.
Well, this deep dive into Dobbs v. Wiggins has been fascinating, hasn't it? It's amazing how something that seems as simple as barking dogs can turn into such a complex legal issue and really highlights how important it is to balance individual rights with the needs of the community.
Definitely. It's a good reminder that the law is everywhere, even in the most unexpected places. And sometimes those seemingly ordinary cases can teach us a lot about how we interact with each other and the world around us.
On that note, we'll wrap things up for today. Thanks for joining us for another deep dive.